Hello, I'm Dennis Jers, your door-to-door storyteller, and I'd like to give you a story. This story is called The Details of the Devil by Greta Lynn Darkey.
Aeolus is the volatile element,
Legion said, staring across the table.
He still doesn't even know who's really responsible for his fame.
He knows he made a pact with you, Marcus, the band manager, remarked.
Yes,
the devil agreed.
But he's chosen to forget parts of his past. And he's even convinced himself that his success is somehow based on his own merit.
The demon snorted out a laugh, then picked his nose. The gesture unsettled Jacob Marcus. He would have expected a devil to act rudely, but this demon liked to appear as a very attractive and well-manicured middle-aged man in a sports coat, jeans, and snakeskin boots. The type of men who dressed like that, who actually got their nails done, Marcus noticed, didn't pick their noses in public. I can't force him to do anything, Marcus pointed out, trying to ignore the fact that the devil sat there sucking his little finger like a child. Legion pulled his pinky free of his lips with a loud pop.
Of course you can't force him, the demon admitted. Just remind him of his promise. I'm calling in a favor, that's all. It's not much. Just a few words sung at the right time by the right amount of people. Why should he care, anyway?
I'll do my best, Marcus said.
Make sure that you do.
Legion answered, leaning forward across the table.
You've got important things at stake here, too, you know.
The devil's breath reeked of sour milk and a stale flesh, and at close range his blue forked tongue showed through his white teeth. Marcus tried not to flinch back, but the sight of that blue-black tongue terrified him.
I'll talk to him, Marcus promised, his voice breaking.
Yes, do that,
Legion hissed, without leaning back.
Or I'll see you in hell sooner rather than later.
Frank Moriani sat in front of his backstage mirror and slicked his dirty blonde hair back, 50s greaser style. Then he laughed at his reflection and spiked up the gold-tipped tufts until his head resembled a porcupine's pelt. Where most singers might be nervous before they went on stage, Frank, or Aeolus, as his public knew him, didn't feel a single butterfly in his stomach. Hadn't he sung flawlessly all over the country for 3 years now? His voice hadn't cracked once since his first hit single, Fire on the Fence, had made it to the top five in less than a month after its release. He couldn't go wrong. He didn't even need to warm up. Someone knocked on the dressing room door.
Yeah,
Frank said, not looking away from the mirror. Hey, Marcus slid through the door and shut it after himself.
Listen, you know that song?
Dude, I know all the songs, Frank laughed.
I know you do, Marcus fumbled. But I mean that song, you know, the one about Christian blood and all that stuff.
Fire on the Fence.
Frank looked at his manager's reflection in the mirror.
Hell yeah, that was the song that started it all.
Yeah, well,
Marcus cleared his throat.
I noticed that at the last two concerts, you didn't have the crowd sing the refrain with you, you know, holding out the mic for them and everything.
Yeah, so what?
Frank went back to his hair.
I do what I want on stage, man, you know that.
I know, but do you think you could have them sing tonight? The refrain, I mean? It would be nice if...
Nice?
Frank turned.
I'm not playing a nursing home charity show, Marcus. I don't care about nice.
Well, I talked to our boss and...
Our boss? What the hell, Marcus? I am your boss.
You know who I mean.
No, I don't. I don't even think I believe that shit anymore. I was probably on drugs or something anyway.
I don't think you were.
And how would you know? You never tried anything unless I gave it to you, and I never even gave you the good stuff.
Marcus stepped in close to Frank, leaning over to partially cover the mirror. Frank looked up at him, surprised.
All I know is that you were nothing until we did all that stuff with the book, Marcus said, suddenly intense. Before that, everyone knew you weren't any good. I knew it. Hell, you knew it. You wouldn't be anywhere right now if it weren't for...
Frank stood up and pushed Marcus hard in the chest.
You keep that crap to yourself, he whispered fiercely. I don't believe in that shit anymore.
Marcus started laughing hysterically.
It believes in you! Just make sure they sing the chorus tonight, Marcus wheezed. We'll play the song at midnight. Just make sure they sing it, okay?
He left the room. Frank sat down with his back to the mirror and crossed his arms. He was trying not to think about that winter night when he and his college roommate Jake Marcus had stolen an old book from the university library. It was a non-circulating volume of The History and Practice of Devil Worship, not thinking it would actually work, and set up a sort of seance in their dorm room. Jake and Frank had made deals that night. The devil had actually suggested the name Aeolus as a stage name for Frank. It had all seemed like fun and games then, but the demon was getting more and more demanding lately. It never came to Frank anymore, just to Marcus, and it insisted on the oddest things. Sometimes it would suggest lyrics for a song, or sometimes a chord structure. Recently, it often asked them to sing certain songs at precise times and in out-of-the-way places. Frank didn't like this. The band had toured the East Coast last spring, and the demon made them miss New York City altogether in order to sing a concert in Rochester. This wasn't the big-time fun Frank had dreamed of before he became Aeolus. He felt like a second-rate performer, playing the small bars instead of raising the big crowds. But even more disturbing was what would happen in the town just after the band left. He sang in Columbus, and an old church burned down the next day just 2 blocks away from the concert hall. When he did a gig in Colorado Springs last November, a sudden blizzard hit the town and killed 2 dozen people. The Rochester concert proved a prelude to a horrendous flash flood. That time had made Frank angry. The band had almost been caught on the road in that flood, and Marcus said they would have died if they hadn't been held up in the hotel an extra hour. And now, they were in L.A., finally, a big town and a sold-out concert, and Frank was supposed to bow down and play puppet again. He spat right onto the lushly carpeted floor of the dressing room. To hell with it, he thought. The stage lights sent waves of heat down on the Elementals, Aeolus's band. The smell of sweat and marijuana wafted up from the seething mosh pit. Aeolus sucked in the stench eagerly. He lived for this. He screamed into the spit-covered microphone. The writhing masses screamed back. They knew the words that constituted his soul because he gave them those words. And he gave them more than his words. His music floated out over their heads, distorted and discontented. They understood his song. He'd been singing for 2 hours. Midnight was coming. Marcus gave the band a signal from his post out of the circle of limelight. The Elementals crashed into Fire on the Fence. Aeolus wailed the first verse to his fans. The song was high and melancholy, a lament of discarded youth. Aeolus liked this song because it was one of the few that his band played that actually featured the vocals without a lot of distracting distortion. He sang his black heart out to the crowd. They wanted to answer. He knew it. He held out the mic, the signal for them to take over the chorus. But then he pulled the mic away. A few people started in on the chorus, but they left off when Aeolus took over again. Aeolus looked down. Some of his fans seemed confused. It was only then that he realized that he was changing the words, making them up as he went. They sounded strange. They sounded almost hopeful. From offstage, Aeolus could see Marcus tearing his hair, but Aeolus didn't care. He suddenly remembered that his name was not Aeolus, it was Francis, and he was writing poetry. And it was damn good poetry. From the back of the theater, a good-looking, middle-aged man in snakeskin boots leant against the door frame leading out into the parking lot, his eyes blazing. He had wanted that earthquake so badly. This place positively reeked of unrepentant souls that had almost been his. But that kid stood up on stage, changing those perfect demonic lyrics into something utterly human and creative and even buoyant. A blue forked tongue hissed out and in again from between the well-dressed man's pearly teeth. Another man, not so slickly dressed and utterly ordinary looking, stepped through the door and leaned against the opposite wall. Both men stared at the stage.
"Did you suggest those lyrics to him?" the first man asked.
"No, he came up with those all on his own."
"You won't win next time."
"Maybe not. But that's really up to him, isn't it?" The ordinary-looking man smiled, and with a nod to the fuming demon, slipped out through the doorway and disappeared into the night. You just listened to The Details of the Devil by Gretelin Darkey, read to you by your door-to-door storyteller, Dennis Jers. Thank you for listening.
First published in Gilbert Magazine, a publication of the American Chesterton Society. A production of We Are One Body Audio Theater.